Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It is a great Tuesday. Busy show in front of us. Peter King is going to join us here momentarily. With today being NFL trade deadline, Peter's working on quite a few things, and he's going to join us via Skype from his, I think he's in his apartment in New York City in his man cave working away. So Peter King, SI.com, the Monday morning quarterback. Peter King, very popular part of what we do. Peter will be with us here via Skype here in a few minutes. Got to talk to him about Kaepernick, Vernon Davis, Cardinals first half of the season. Just a lot going on. Ken Whisenhunt was fired today. More on that coming up. Matt Leinart just going off on Twitter today. And, you know, I think last night the protesters rappelling from the rafters during the Panthers game. We'll get into all those things with Peter King. That'll be coming up here in a couple of minutes. Pedro Gomez will be with us, our ESPN baseball insider, breaking down the Royals' beatdown of the Mets, the offseason ahead here in Arizona, and former Diamondback coach Andy Green taking over as the new manager of the Padres. That is all coming up with Pedro Gomez. That will be momentarily. And also on the show today, we'll have comments from Bruce Arians yesterday. I was over at Bruce's thing. Bruce, on the first half of the season, Calais yesterday was a target of Bruce Arians I thought was interesting. And much more on that front. Suns played last night. We'll have more on that. ASU accused of cheating. Oregon using bed sheets. And a lot of baseball stuff. And tonight's the first college football playoff poll. But as promised, Peter King joins us now via Skype for a couple of minutes. The Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, senior NFL writer, halfway mark of the season, the MMQB, the great space for plenty of NFL content. Are we expecting anything major today on the trade deadline that, or is yesterday all it with Vernon Davis, Peter?
I don't really expect very much to happen, Brad. If anything, there's always one or two little deals that happen, but I can't see anything major going on. I do think that there's a lot of noise around the tight end position. Jared Cook in St. Louis is one. Mercedes Lewis in Jacksonville. You can definitely have him. Those are two names I was hearing some yesterday. There's been a lot of noise about Cleveland. I was in Cleveland on Sunday. I think a lot of it is simply the Browns want everybody to know that they are open for business. And if they're open for business, everybody's going to ask about their veterans. I think the one guy who I think they would like someone to make a good offer for, and it hasn't been forthcoming yet, is Paul Kruger, defensive end, who hasn't given them quite the pass rush in a year and a half that they had hoped.
Mm. Peter, I want to talk to you about the Cardinals at the halfway mark of the season, and then we'll get into Kaepernick and Whisenhunt and even Steve Keim. But Carson Palmer has numbers that are right there with Tom Brady, and Bruce Arians was asked earlier this week if he should be an MVP candidate. Pretty strong statement, and Bruce said, why not? What's your view of Carson Palmer in that debate at the halfway mark of the season?
I think there's a number of quarterbacks who right now I think definitely deserve to be in that debate. I think Brady is above all at this point. But I mean, that isn't to diminish anything some of these other guys have done. I think Andy Dalton should absolutely be in that debate, especially after going to Pittsburgh on Sunday and winning. I think Cam Newton should be in the debate as well. I would say the top four candidates we've just mentioned, Tom Brady, Carson Palmer, Andy Dalton, and Cam Newton right now would be my one through four. It's been a little bit of a strange year so far with Aaron Rodgers. He's missing a lot of his major weapons. Oh, either that or they're diminished because of injury, and their offense has been at times downright average. So that's a bit of a surprise, I think. But I think I would have it be a four-way race as of 8 weeks into the season. with any of the four capable of winning it.
They're 6-2 out here, and I'm still, and Bruce had to give them the speech at halftime of, are you pretenders or contenders? And I'm still on that side of the street. I'm not overly impressed with where they are from a consistency standpoint. What about you? You've seen them here. You were in Cleveland. You saw them. What do you make out of this team at 6-2? Are they a good 6-2 team, or is it just they played a bunch of bad teams?
If they turned it over one time instead of four on Sunday, they could have scored 50 points. And then I don't think anybody would be talking like that. I mean, I went into the locker room after the game and you know, just kind of shooting the breeze with Carson Palmer, and he just said, hey, strange day. And, you know, he's look, this is something that, you know, you just can't tell. You know, fumbles are strange. I'm not really sure that there's much consistency to fumbling. But the Cardinals imported a running back who's second in the league in rushing. I think he still is. You know, fumbled twice, and as Palmer said, man, he never fumbles. And so sometimes things can be fluky. But to me, the Cardinals, unless they were turning it over, pretty much had their way with Cleveland. And again, I don't mean to say everything is bright and sunny and rosy, but think of where they turned it over on the field. Think of, you know, the short scoring drives in a couple of cases that Cleveland had. I'm just telling you, in my opinion, they turn it over one time instead of four. That's a 50-10 game. But again, that's not the way football is played. I think they're a good team. I think that they showed some better signs of being able to rush the passer on Sunday. But I would be worried going down the stretch of this season if they play a really good passing team. And, you know, there are good passing teams on the horizon. You know, Cincinnati obviously is one of them. I think Minnesota is going to be significantly better when they play them. Mm-hmm. Teddy Bridgewater gets better every time I see him. And you've got to think that Aaron Rodgers is going to figure out what he's doing by the end of December when they play him. So I think they're going to need a better pass rush if they're going to be standing on February 6th or 7th, whenever it is in Santa Clara.
It was interesting that Bruce Arians went out of his way to say Calais Campbell should have played better. And Calais is a Pro Bowl player out here, and that's Bruce. I mean, he's gotten on Fitz. He's gotten on Carson. That's just how he is out here. There's none of this, it's a veteran, I'm going to leave him alone. And I think they just need to see more up front. They brought Freeney in, but they're still not getting the results they need up front.
Yeah, I mean, then there's – that's one of the reasons why, you know, today, and again, you could probably mention 20 names. You know, all you have to do is look at underachieving teams, look and see if they have anybody who can rush the passer, and see if Steve Keim is making a phone call today about him. But you're right. I think that in an ideal world, they would have seen more from Dwight Freeney by now. But I think that's the one thing, Brad, that could really hold him back.
Before I let you go, just bounce around real quick. Were you surprised, shocked by Colin Kaepernick being benched in the Davis trade in San Francisco?
Well, look, I mean, to me, when I look at, you know, when I look at Davis, I don't see a great player right now. Mm-hmm. Now, probably some of it is due to the fact that they've been in trouble because Colin Kaepernick has not been an accurate passer. But I think that without any question, I'd rather have him as my backup tight end in Denver. I don't see him going in and stealing the job from Owen Daniels. They love Owen Daniels. Gary Kubiak loves Owen Daniels. But I do think that another intermediate target for Peyton Manning is what the doctor ordered. I think he'll be better there, but I looked it up today. I mean, the guy's got 44 catches in the last year and a half. Hmm. I think Harbaugh was always disappointed in him last year. So what are they going to get? I don't think they're going to get a game changer. I think they're getting a nice little insurance policy.
And is Kaepernick done in San Francisco, Peter?
You know, I think he is. I think he probably is. I can't see the 49ers paying him all that money to stay next year. I think this is when their contract and their wise contract that they signed a couple of years ago with Kaepernick finally is going to come through. Basically, that it's not going to cripple them on the cap by getting rid of them at the end of the year.
And last question, Ken Whisenhunt being fired. Of course, Cardinal fans know Ken all too well. Were you surprised by that bit of news?
A little bit surprised. I thought it was precipitous. I mean, I know he's 3-20 there, but his quarterback, who he wanted so badly, has been hurt for the last month or most of the last month. And so that's why, to me, I thought this was a very, very quick hook on Whisenhunt.
Let you go off that, Peter. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad.
It's Peter King joining us via Skype in New York City from his man cave. Appreciate his time and from his offices there. Pedro Gomez is going to join us in about 10 minutes, and we'll talk with Pedro on the baseball front. The World Series, No Way, No Way by Matt Harvey. And on the other side, I'll get back into some of the things going on in the state of Arizona today that I see. Of course, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. If you're just finding us for the first time, our website, sports360az.com. Bookmark it, sports360az.com. We're Arizona-centric. Things that I've seen over the last 4 years since I walked away from television. And we do this every day. So thanks for finding us and jumping on board. Back with more after this timeout. Thanks for being with us. We are going to shift over to the college scene now. So yesterday I went out to, I was all over the place. I was at Arian's press conference. Eric was there. I think we were both a little eyebrow raised by him getting on Calais some. But I think that's Bruce Arians, as I was telling Peter. You know, so were you surprised by that?
Just so amusing. I mean, you never know what he's going to say. He usually says something. It usually involves some sort of profanity.
And we can't
check,
use it.
Check, check.
Yeah.
All those came true yesterday.
The John Brown question. So you guys know this. Yesterday, he was asked, somebody asked that, about John Brown and his status. And then they followed up with some fans aren't happy that he's not in the field. And, of course, that's fantasy football guys. And Arian said, tough bleep. You know, and in the space I'm in, I could say what he said, but, you know, I don't need to go that far. He just said, tough bleep. And I think that's pretty funny that he's just that way about it, because it is tough bleep. But that really is a where fandom has gone to nowadays. It's more about the fantasy team than even the team that's in your own town. That's just where it's gone. It's funny how that works. Wiz was fired today in Tennessee. So a record of 3-20, and Matt Leinart took to Twitter and just crushed him and said, now Marcus Mariota has a chance and karma. And I mean, it's just like, man, let it go. It was a while ago, Matt. And we saw Matt out at Pac-12 Media Day, and he was great about talking about turning the page. But I guess that's just not where we're going to go with Matt Leinart. On the college front, so tonight is the college football playoff. It's the first round of the polling that is released. Eric doesn't care. He thinks it's a TV ratings grab. Of course it is.
It is, and I'm a sucker, and I will watch it.
Of course it is.
I've been telling you all week how much I don't want to watch it and how much I hate it, and yeah, I'll be there. Yep, tonight, 5 o'clock.
What, it's at 5?
Mm-hmm.
I won't see it. I'll be a dad.
You don't have to see it. You'll hear all about it on social media.
Well, no, that's true. That's true. I got coaching stuff tonight. So, but I'll watch it later. That's what DVRs and all that stuff's for. But Clemson, I'm thinking it's going to be Clemson, LSU, Baylor, Ohio State. But part of me also says, because I'm going to go with your theory, they're going to throw somebody in there who has no business of being in there and leave somebody out just to get everybody all worked up. Right? Like, for Alabama not being in there, the Alabama fans will be just torqued out, but they shouldn't be in there right now.
I don't know if it's a shoe-in that Ohio State makes the top four. I don't know.
Well, that would drive people crazy, too. That would move the needle for
ratings. Of course.
That would move the needle for ratings.
Of course. It's almost a guarantee, though, that Clemson's going to be in there, LSU's going to be in there, Baylor's going to be in there. Those three are...
Where's Notre Dame?
They're probably... chomping at the heels. I don't know if they're a top four team right
Where's
now.
Where's Stanford?
See Notre Dame. Same type of situation. Although the resumes, Notre Dame's resume is a little bit more impressive than Stanford's.
Well, and Stanford wants to forget about the loss of Northwestern. And the only way that they can do that is to have Northwestern be relevant. And they've got to beat Notre Dame. So if you look at it, the playoff games that are coming up for the playoff, Actually, there's one this weekend. There's a couple. Clemson, Florida State. That's a playoff game. LSU, Alabama. That's a playoff game. I'm not going to say Baylor, Kansas State. Like these people, these nitwits at Fox Sports 1 that are saying our game's better or something because it's
not
the
even the best
Bengals.
Game in the conference.
I mean
Baylor's TCU's playing them. Oklahoma State. Those two teams are unbeaten.
Baylor's going to kill them tonight. So,
Thursday? Yes, they will.
Yeah, Baylor will kill them. Are there other games that you look at this week? Not really. It's LSU, Alabama this week for me. That's right. And Clemson, Florida State. Those are the games that I'm looking at.
And no TCU, Oklahoma State, huh? 8-0 versus 8-0 doesn't do much for you?
You don't think TCU's any good.
I don't. I mean, I think they're good. I just don't know if they're one of the four best.
Do you don't know or you know for sure they're not?
Right now, they're not.
You don't think their defense is any good?
It's not. It's getting better, but it's not very good.
Okay, what do you make out of ASU being accused of cheating by Oregon?
Get over it.
I don't know. They're not cheating good enough.
When you drive down the freeway and there's a 65-mile-per-hour speed limit sign,
right?
Take a poll of how many people on the freeway are actually going 65 miles an hour if they can go that fast or faster.
They
happens.
Will.
It happens. And who is Todd Graham really good friends with? NFL coach?
Okay.
Belichick?
With Belichick. Okay.
I'm just saying. I'm not accusing. I'm just saying.
So, no, but this thing is just silly. You know, they lost to a drunk who got fired, and then they lose to a team that's holding up bed sheets. That's what this season has become for ASU, if you think about it, right? I mean, come on. Oregon, I saw the clip from Scott Frost, the O coordinator. I went to the Ducks site yesterday and looked at it, and it's like, get over it. Your team's not very good either.
Mike Leach also commented that he thinks ASU might be stealing signs too.
Well, but
funny how he drops that on the week that ASU is playing up at Wazoo.
And we're going to have Mike Leach on the show tomorrow or Thursday. Mike Leach is going to be with us on the show, so you know I'll ask him directly about this stuff. There is gamesmanship. I'm sorry. Well, actually, I'm not sorry. For people to sit and whine about, well, they're cheating. And can you see this? Just envision. You're Mark Helfrich, okay? Or you're director of football ops, Eric. And it's game week for ASU. And you are actually in a planning meeting last week at Oregon. Did you guys pack the helmets? Yes. Did you guys pack the play cards? Yes. Did you pack the bed sheets to cut them off from cheating and stealing our signs? No, we'll go down to Target and get some right now. We'll go to Walmart because they're on sale. Are you going to be the bed sheet holder? What are you doing at the game this week? Well, I'm the trainer. I wrap ankles. Okay, what do you do? Well, I'm the guy that holds up the bed sheet.
Because Oregon, Brad, was the one of the innovators of the big, square things that had like an In-N-Out burger and
Mickey Mouse
and then like a Ferrari, and it was one of those four.
Right.
Usually that was the play, and they'd have like two or three people holding up those cards. I wondered why they had the bed sheets on Thursday, but now we all know.
Okay, so here's the other way you can look at it, Eric. You're Todd Graham. You're going to be the guy that has the binoculars up in the press box, and you're going to chart everything that they do. So there, what do you do? Well, I sit up in the press box and I see a guy scratch his groin like he's going out of style, like he's got a mosquito bite. I see the guy that picks his nose, and then I decipher what it is. It's Morse code. You know, it's intercepting intelligence. That's all they're doing.
Sort of like
it happens in war.
Well, and it's sort of like a hitter or someone on second stealing signs in baseball. I mean, it happens more often than you would think.
I don't see any bed sheets, though.
No, that would be great, though.
Hale pulled up a bed sheet, you know?
Yeah. Catchers start wearing towels over their crotch
to
block signals, I don't know how the pitcher would see it, but...
Sure. Grab both, you're running. Grab one, you're just not. You're going to take a lead. I don't know. But seriously, are we going to start seeing stuff? Because when you see stuff at one level, it trickles down to the next level. It trickles down to the next level. So we can see this at high school and Pop Warner. What are you guys doing? Well, our seven-year-old team, they're stealing signs over there. You're going to hold up the bed sheet. I got a text last week from a guy, a good friend, and he's telling me how the team that they're playing in the playoffs showed up at their facility, high school, showed up at their facility and watched their practice from what he was hearing from the coaches. And the team is like 50 miles away. So I said to him, I texted back. I said, well, look, just copy and scan your playbook and send him a gas card. You know, I mean, come on, seriously, dude, we have to go spy on them. But that's what it that's what it's come to. So if Mike Leach, because he's Mike Leach, maybe he comes up with something better than bed sheets this week. Maybe they light a smoke bomb off over on the sidelines whenever they hold up a sign.
It's funny you should mention that high school story. I was talking to one of the varsity coaches here in the Valley who runs a very, very good, successful program. And he said, we don't allow our players to put individual highlights on Huddle.
Really?
I'm like, why?
Wow.
And he said, oh, we don't need other teams scouting our formations. But we use Huddle highlights when we're scouting opposition. Like, man, all the way down the high school level,
sure
this stuff
no,
starting.
You know what, though? That's game. That's film.
It is. It's gamesmanship, and you, hey,
that's not
more power to you.
That's not a bed sheet.
It's not.
That's not holding. I'm fine with that. Like, do I fault Todd Graham? I just think they're not – whoever's up in the press box this year has not done a good job, if you think about it. If they're stealing signs, and with the losses they've had this year, I mean, who was stealing signs during the USC game? You had a guy inebriated over on the sideline. Pedro Gomez is next, and we'll talk with Pedro. There's a bunch going on in baseball today, including the Diamondbacks losing their third base coach to the Padres, but in Washington, what a disaster. So they had a manager, and then they go with Dusty Baker. And then he was there at the World Series on Sunday night, and the Matt Harvey, no way, no way. And what's his view 48 hours later and the offseason straight ahead? That's all with Pedro Gomez. I'm Brad Sussmat.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Pedro Gomez joins us now, as he does every week. Okay, so Matt Harvey is on the mound and he's dealing. It's the World Series. You saw Schilling and you saw Johnson do their thing. And you're thinking in the back of your head, there's no way that he's not coming out to start the next inning. You see him say, no way, no way. Or maybe you didn't see it right away, but you see him come out. Are you in agreement with Terry Collins as he comes out to start the ninth?
Me personally, I completely am. I like that pitchers want to do that, and that they should. I know that it's a different era we live in. It's not the Bob Gibson, Juan Marichal era, even Mickey Lolich, guys like that, where a complete game was nothing. I mean, they would do 15 to 20 complete games a year, and that is the only difference between the pitchers now and the pitchers, you know, when we were younger. And you do have to really love the fact that he wanted to come out, but you've got to have a really, really short leash. And I think after the walk, that's where Terry Collins made the mistake, by letting him pitch to Eric Hosmer with the runner on first. That right when the walk is issued, you say, okay, I gave you a chance to start the ninth. Let's go to our guy, Familia. This is a guy who has slammed the door for us all year long.
Why didn't he do that, do you think, in hindsight? I mean, he explained himself, but you know, Pedro, I'm right there with you. It's give him the shot. But, geez, oh, man, you're leaving him out there after a leadoff walk, of all things, in the ninth in the World Series.
Yeah, and that's where he's going to have to live with that decision the rest of his life. And he will, believe me. I've known Terry Collins a long time. It's going to kill him, literally, the rest of his life. He will be – he's the oldest manager in baseball at 66.
Mm-hmm.
But he will literally be, you know, 80 years old and still talking about the time that he led Harvey – pitch to Hosmer and how things just turned around. And, you know, you're always second guessed. Baseball is easily the sport where the coach or the manager is second guessed more than any other sport. And it's because you see everything with your eyes. It's not like football where, hey man, you called the wrong defense and maybe 1/20th of the people know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sport where everyone sees it in front of them, and it's sad, it's unfortunate, but I love that he allowed him to start the inning. I think that the mistake was after the walk. That's where you say, okay, I'm pulling the plug and we're going to Familia here. If we lose with Familia, we lose with the best closer that, you know, in the National League. But if not, then we're going on to play game six.
Well, here's the thing. I'm watching this series, and just correct me if I'm wrong. You're much smarter than I'll ever be on this stuff, and along with a bunch of other things.
I highly doubt that.
No. So the Mets' infield defense was not good at the start of the series, was not good at the end of the season. The Mets' defense...
We talked about that before the series, remember?
Yeah, I mean, they had really good pitching, and that was it. If I'm looking at the two teams side by side, they have really good pitching, and that's it. The better team won this series.
No question.
And now, are the Royals in for a long run? Do you see them in for a long run? Are the Mets just a year away and a year of experience with those young pitchers? Take me through both these
things. I think the Mets are going to be interesting next year. I don't know that they'll be able to equal the success that they had this year. And the biggest reason is you look at their ball club, and yes, they're still going to have the pitching, but they're going to lose Yoenis Cespedes, Daniel Murphy, Kelly Johnson, and... Juan Uribe. Those are all free agents that are probably not going to be back. And even if a guy like Kelly Johnson is back, he's not a difference maker, let's say.
Yeah, he's a guy.
So you're going to see some differences with that offense. And let's not forget that before Cespedes got there, they were among, if not the worst, scoring offense in the game. So they definitely had issues scoring runs. But they were able to stay in games because of that pitching staff. Brad, you know, I turn myself blue talking about this all the time. The pitching is what keeps you in games. So they'll be able to stay in games, no doubt. But will these pitchers be able to equal what they did this year again next year? And that's where the question marks are going to come up. I know that Zach Wheeler will be back after his Tommy John rehab. And he is, by all accounts, on par with DeGrom, with Syndergaard, with Harvey. Wow. He's right up there. You know, they have what the Mets have is something that every club wishes they had. Young pitchers under control. Yep. When I say control, you know what I mean? I'm talking about payroll control. Yep. They still are not arbitration eligible. I think Harvey might be, but the others are not. So their salaries are still going to be very, very affordable. And that's something that if you really are looking to trade to really bolster your roster, you might be able to turn one of those guys into a 3-for-1 type thing where you're getting three quality pieces. And who knows what that could do. Let's not forget that just a few years ago, the Kansas City Royals had Zach Greinke. And when they decided we're going to trade this guy, they got some really good pieces that are now flourishing for them, one being the shortstop Alcides Escobar and the other being the center fielder Lorenzo Cain. Those both came from the Milwaukee Brewers in the Zach Greinke deal. So you can turn a quality pitcher into multiple pieces for your club.
I'm going to talk to you. We're talking with Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider Valley resident. I'm going to talk to you about the Diamondbacks offseason in a second, but I want to go through the managerial stuff. What is going on in Washington? I mean, you have Bud Black who's there, and then he agrees, and then he finds out how much he's being paid, I guess, from what I'm seeing today. And then they go get Dusty Baker. Bud Black was there to turn around Strasburg, wasn't he? Bud Black was there to turn around their pitching. That one caught me by surprise. Andy Green leaving the Diamondbacks for San Diego. That caught me by surprise. The Dodgers still don't have a manager. I'm not surprised Mattingly goes to Florida. It's a New York guy going to Florida. That just sells and sells and sells all day long. The managerial cycle, what do you see out of these jobs so far?
Sadly, you're seeing a lot of similar-looking faces, ages, and guys that can be controlled by their GM. And that's the new reality in baseball. Mm. That is what baseball has become, where a GM can, at 11 a.m. or noon, turn to his manager and say, here's your lineup tonight. Mm. And the manager is just going to say, okay. And that is not necessarily a good thing for baseball. You're seeing far less personalities in the manager's chair. You're seeing a lot of scoops of vanilla, and that is not necessarily a good thing for baseball. You're not seeing the Whitey Herzogs. You're not seeing the Billy Martins. You're just not seeing a lot of personality.
Yeah.
Lou Piniella, that type of, you know, manager. So I don't know that necessarily is good, because let's face it, guys like that, you pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've lived in the Valley long enough to remember when Vince Tobin was just called,
Mr. Beige. Mr. Beige.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A slice of beige or whatever it was that he was called. So, you know, you're seeing a lot more of that in baseball. And, you know, Bud Black's situation, he would have been a very good hire. But when you come down to the negotiating part and you say, here's a one-year deal, or I believe, my understanding is it was about $1.6 million.
Yeah.
It was a one-year deal.
Right.
You know, Buddy turned around and said, no, I'm not doing this for 1 year. I you know, and Baker ended up taking a two-year deal. But, you know, you're seeing some dysfunction in that ownership group. And really, Brad, you and I have talked about this. When you look at the clubs that don't get a lot of traction, a lot of it stems from an ownership group that is a little too meddling. When you look at the owners who really just stay away, that's where you tend to see much more success.
Well, that's like it's like here. You know, I saw Ken Kendrick last week. We had a cup of coffee for an hour and talked about all sorts of things, but he is not, since La Russa and Stewart have come on board, you haven't heard a peep from Ken. It's just, he's just going to go let this thing go. There's some that believe he
that maybe, wasn't the case before, though.
No,
that
I know.
Was not the
I know.
Case before.
I know. Yes, no, sure. You're right. But the point is they're telling him, you know, we're going to handle this. You don't need to be out front, to your point, which is to go underground. Andy Green. You know, let's just talk Diamondbacks here for a minute. Is he ready to be a manager? Did this one catch you by surprise?
It did. You know, I was at the World Series when that one was announced, and it caught everyone by surprise, even people from front offices out there that were, you know, watching the World Series. They were like, none of us saw that one coming. I will say that Tony La Russa, who I did run into after game three it was, said, this guy's going to be a good one. You watch. This guy's got all the qualities to succeed. So La Russa certainly gave his stamp of approval to Andy Green. And everything I've heard is that when he was managing down below in the minors for the D-backs, when someone like Dave Duncan would show up, he was just full of questions. He always wanted to know more. Mm. And that's where Duncan turned around and told Tony, hey, you gotta keep an eye on this guy. This guy really looks like he's got his stuff together. And that's where, you know, they started greenlighting him for promotions, and he eventually became the third base coach at the big league level. They really enjoyed a lot. Is that me?
No, it's you. It's you. I mean, it's probably you. Probably said something.
The turntable. I should turn the turntable off.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I wish I had a turntable in here. Okay, before I get you out of here, two other things quickly. Dodgers don't have a manager yet. Who's the guy or guys?
Probably going to be Gabe Kapler, who is, again, somebody that the GM has a very tight relationship with, going back to their days in Tampa when Andrew Friedman was the GM of the Rays and Kapler was working player development for the Tampa Bay Rays years ago. But again, it's one of those relationships where the GM can kind of dictate a lot of what goes on, and that seems to be the new trend in baseball. Mm-hmm. And like I said a little while ago, I don't necessarily think that's a good thing.
Okay, and is there a target or two for the Diamondbacks, whether it be free agency or trade stuff? A couple of years ago, we had heard about Tanaka and the Diamondbacks right around the time the World Series was finishing up. Mm-hmm. This year, there's no way they're going after Zach Greinke, in my opinion, in my mind. They're not going to do...
Or David Price, I don't
David
think.
Price, yeah. So do you see anybody out there? Is it just too early? Now, we're just a couple days from
the World Series. It's a little early, but I think the Diamondbacks learned a couple of years ago that you can't wait. You can't just shuffle your feet around and hope that the guy you want is still available a month from now. You know, free agency starts just in a few days. It starts 5 days from the end of the World Series. So it's going to be very, very quick, and you're going to see some clubs be incredibly aggressive. And I think the D-backs learned a few years ago where they kind of said, okay, well, we'll wait for the market to kind of adjust itself, and then we'll be able to make our moves. Listen, the market never adjusts itself. The market is what the market is. And payrolls are not going down, and paychecks for elite pitchers or elite players are not coming down. So if you want to get someone that you want, you better be ready to move right away on November 6th or 7th, whatever the day is, mm-hmm. and be ready to make a quality offer, not one that's going to be a low ball offer if that's truly who you want. So I think that the D-backs have learned their lesson from a couple of years ago. And if there is somebody out there that they have targeted, and my understanding is that what they'd like is to have a starter who has leadership type abilities. Mm-hmm. And that's what they need for this staff, because when you look at the staff, it is not a bad staff. Patrick Corbin looks like he is rebounded and is going to be the guy. You know, Hellickson is who Hellickson is, but for the time being, that's not a bad guy. Zach Godley is the guy to watch out for in the future. That's somebody that the Diamondbacks, I'm told, think very highly of and think that he could absolutely make the jump to be a maybe not a number one type starter, but a very good one. He's the key who came in the Miguel Montero trade from the Cubs. So, you know, they've got some good pieces. They made some very good strides this year. But in order to make the jump to contender, they're going to have to get somebody that can kind of lead this young staff.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I appreciate your time as always. Talk soon. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez with us every week, ESPN baseball analyst. Whew. Some good stuff there. Did I see that the founders of Call of Duty, which comes out next week, are merging with Candy Crush? I'm going to research that during the break.
I like how you're asking me like I would know anything about that.
Well, no, I'm thinking of myself.
You're looking at me like, do you know anything about video games? Do I strike you as a video game guy?
No.
That was really snarky. That was really snarky of me to say.
No, your snark is part of your deal. Back with more after this timeout. So I'm very excited about this week as it's progressing. The Fiesta Bowl folks called and said, we want to get caught up with you, so I have to go hit a golf ball today with them, do some business. And tonight, the TV show's on tonight. We'll be on Fox Sports Arizona at 6 and at 10 and at 1. And by the way, the show has been picked up for a fourth airing at 7 a.m. So in the mornings, if you guys need a football fix, 7 a.m. to 7:30 on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. So a couple months in, and they actually want more of us. Who knew? Who knew? What else was it? Oh, Spectre's tomorrow night. I have the screening for Spectre tomorrow night. There's actually one going on right now. Goody's at the 10 a.m. one. And I told him, I said, text me after it's over if this bond is any good or not, and do not give it away. And that dork better not send me all the, you know, James blows up at the end or any of that stuff. But we're looking forward to that tomorrow night. I saw where Candy Crush. Eric, do you play Candy Crush? You play that game?
No, I don't.
You even know what I'm talking about, Candy Crush?
I just know when it pops up on my Facebook page. It's like I exit out as quickly as I possibly can.
I think it's a chick game.
Hey, someone invited you to play Candy Crush.
Yeah, I know.
Great.
So my wife plays Candy. I think it's a chick deal. Oh, do you play Jared?
Yeah, his wife.
His wife does. Yeah. Yeah, it's a chick deal.
Jared's a man of few words over there, so I do the talking
for
him.
No, he can go take your camera. It's fine. I need somebody who's played Candy Crusher. So my wife gets me into Candy Crush. This is like a year ago, and then I feel like a loser. I'm sitting there playing this game in public like, dude, do you have any life at all? And I'll play Call of Duty all day long. Like, the new Call of Duty's coming out. I'm not an e-gamer by any stretch of the imagination, but I played Candy Crush. I read today, though. Do you see this? Or you probably didn't, if you don't follow the game. Candy Crush has been bought by the guy or the group that is with Call of Duty.
Only on this show can you find Candy Crush.
That's good.
See? Yeah, I mean, you're enamored by it. Like, your mouth is open. You're
look
like,
at how
wow,
great that is.
Things are moving and
you
numbers.
You got to get those lemons all lined up together. So Candy Crush and Call of Duty are now one. And the guys, the group, the merger, is like over $5 billion with a B.
Two totally different games, by the way.
Two totally good. Let's do Candy Crush with Call of Duty. Let's just shoot everything up and blow the candy away.
And then get candy after we blow everything up.
Right.
Makes
or
sense.
Eat
let's
candy
yeah,
and
let's
play
celebrate.
Call of Duty.
Let's celebrate by eating candy.
Play Call of Duty on a sugar fix. Who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, come on, in this day and age. Sports360AZ.com or other stuff. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.